Wausau West zone. Played by Shea Jones. Could not get it out. Turned over. Picked up by Ravala. Upper slot. Ravala shot. Save and then covered up by Julian Scalcucci. It has been a frantic start to overtime here at Marathon Park. 6:09 to go in OT. Number one, 3-3 game. Chippewa Falls beats Stevens Point 4-1 tonight. Massive upset. Massive upset. But now the Warriors need to take care of business here. Puck up the center. With it is Hendricks Damrell. Damrell into the zone. Turns in front. Damrell! A shot hits the pipe! Rebound! Covered up! Oh! Damrell Hendricks made the incredible move. Turned the corner. Got it around the goalie. Hit the pipe. The rebound was there. Kane Damrell chopped at it. Could not get a piece of it. And covered up by Sidorowicz. Oh, so many good chances here for the Warriors. You hate that because you're not going to get an unlimited amount. Need to finish it off. 5:52 to go in OT. Offensive zone draw coming up for Wausau West. Face off left of Sidorowicz. Face off won by the Warriors. Shea Jones whiffs on the shot, but keeps it in. Puck is battled for along the near side boards. And now picked up by Superior. Up the center ice. Into the zone. Easton McGuire. McGuire has it knocked away. Puck is loose on the far side. Kept in deep by Superior. Below the goal line. Whipped along the boards. Back to the point. Kept in again. Now grabbing it is Wausau West. 2-on-1 the other way. Kane Damrell in front. Hendricks. Hendricks is shot and a goal! Hendricks Damrell! And the Warriors win it in overtime. They are jumping into the boards in front of the students. 4-3, Wausau West, as they eliminate a game superior Spartans team. Sidorowicz on his belly, hands to his helmet. He played so well. Defenseman down as well, leaving it all on the ice, both these teams. But in the end, the Warriors find a way as Sidorowicz still down. A couple of his teammates coming over and trying to console him. But what a finish. What a great 2-on-1 between Kane Damrell and Hendricks Damrell. Hendricks with a great shot, but it took a great pass from Cade, and then a perfect shot just inside the left pipe to beat Sidorowicz. What a game. What a, this is the first one.
Down in Stevens Point, Chippewa Falls scores, Fash 1. Other scores around the area, Eau Claire Memorial, that have been reported. 3-1 over Hudson.
I mean, upset nights in this bracket. We'll talk about that in our post game. We'll talk to the coach. Oh, what a night. What a game. 4-3 Warriors in overtime. We'll come back, have our post game coming up. This is Wausau West Hockey on 98.9 WXCO.
Hungry for flavor-packed fun?
Dive into Red Robin's sizzling burgers, mouth-watering fries, and endless options.
Or maybe you're craving the perfect slice.
Then it's Donato's Pizza, your passport to pizza perfection.
Order now and treat yourself to an unforgettable taste experience.
Red Robin and Donato's Pizza, 2255 48 Rib Mountain Drive in Wausau.
Call 715-301-0019 or log on redrobin.com.
Red Robin and Donato's Pizza. Yum.
For more than 60 years, Sun Printing has been Central Wisconsin's commercial printer of choice due to their commitment to quality, creative solutions, and dedicated service. Sun Printing's team offers you a wide spectrum of services, whether you need vehicle graphics, offset, digital, large format, graphic design, or mailing. They print everything under the sun. No project is too big or too small, so give Sun Printing a call at 845-4911 or visit them online at sunprinting.com.
Looking for the best in website design and digital marketing? Look no further than Coast to Coast Marketing, Central Wisconsin's number one choice. We're not just about building great websites, we're about building our community too. That's why for every website you purchase, we'll donate 10% of the sale to the school of your choice. Imagine growing your business while giving back to local schools. It's a win-win. Visit c2cmarketing.com or call 715-379-7460 today and make a difference with your business and your community.
I'm Chad Holmstroy, former Newman Catholic head boys basketball coach Jeff Gress and myself, every Wednesday from 6 till 8 p.m. for the Big High School Sports Show, presented by K5 Construction on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Each week, we'll recap the action in high school basketball and hockey and look ahead to the coming week's matchups. Plus, we'll have special guests. Each week, we'll have an opportunity to sit down with one of our area head coaches to find out more about their team and their program. And also, we'll be joined by one of our area student athletes each week. We'll talk about their sports, talk about school, and a whole bunch more as well. It's the Big High School Sports Show, presented by K5 Construction, every Wednesday night from 6 till 8 p.m. on 98.9 WXCO, BowFallsRadio.com, mobile devices by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app.
I mean, we are seeing what is great about high school athletics right now, because Wausau West was able to celebrate just an amazing win. Wow, wow, wow. And now we're seeing Superior's coaches and the families and the parents as a heartbroken Spartan squad that came here and played just a fantastic game. They played a terrific hockey game here tonight, one that could have gone either way, and they are getting, you know, the support, the congratulations. See their goalie getting a huge hug right down below me as well. But just a big crowd is now leaving. What a game. What a finish. What a night of high school hockey. New Richmond, they took care of business. Everest actually came out and took the lead. 5-1 win for New Richmond after the Evergreens had took the early lead. So it'll be West and New Richmond here Tuesday night. But on the other side of the bracket, really, I mean, amazing. Chippewa Falls went into the KB Willett Ice Arena and defeated the Stevens Point Panthers tonight by a score of 4-1. That is, I think, one of the biggest upsets that we've ever seen in Wisconsin high school hockey, as long as I've been covering it. So Stevens Point is out. Chippewa Falls will next take on Eau Claire Memorial. And Eau Claire Memorial was double-digited by Hudson the last time around. And if I'm not mistaken, I think they said that Memorial beat Hudson. I have to double-check that. But nevertheless, it's going to be a very interesting sectionals next week. But they'll be hard-pressed to top this one. 4-3 Warriors. I see the coach is actually waiting for the crowd to work their way through and come up and talk to us. Let's look at the scoring of this one. Superior took the lead three different times. At 12:26 of the first period, lighting the lamp for the Spartans was Keenan Ravala. Assist on the play went to Brady Haroldson. 1-0, that would be the score at the end of the first period. The Warriors then took advantage of a 5-on-3 power play early in the second. 4:37, it was Cooper DePoit with the goal. Chase Crass with the assist to make it 1-1. Superior regained the lead at 13-11. Scoring the goal was Cameron Laporte. Assist went to Hunter Hansen. And that made it 2-1 Superior at the end of two. The Warriors at 2:06 of the third got back to even. Xander DeBio with the goal. Jake Hain with the assist, 2-2. But less than 2 minutes after that, the Spartans again took the lead. 3:59 on the power play. Scoring was Brady Haroldson. Had a deflection in front on a shot from Easton McGuire. That made it 3-2. Then the Warriors got back to even. Shot from the point by Tegan Rasmus. It found its way to the back of the net. As I said, sometimes you got to get that bounce once in a while. Assist on the play went to Kate Damrell. That evened it up at 3-3. And then after a bucket full of opportunities early in the overtime, the Warriors had a 2-on-1. Beautiful feed. Kate Damrell on the right-hand side. The Hendricks Damrell, and then he put it just inside the left post. Wins it. 4-3 for the Warriors at 2 minutes and 35 seconds of overtime. Joined now by Coach B.J. Branton. Goosebumps, huh? I mean, what a night. What a game. This was everything that playoff. And high school athletics are all about, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's I'm proud of these guys. I mean,
down three times.
There were so many times we could have packed it in. And quite frankly, there were times this year where we did. And I'm just proud of the growth that they made. I mean, you know, I thought we outplayed them the whole first period. The whole first period, we're down 1-0. Outplayed them the second period, down 2-1. You know, and then to be able to get a power play goal. And to be able to, like, you just felt like at some point we were going to break through. I mean, credit to Superior. What an outstanding hockey team. Well-coached, great group of kids. And they played their hearts out. And our guys did, too. And it was just, it's exactly what high school sports is about. Unfortunately, one team had to end their season today, and I'm thankful for the way that our guys played that we get to play at least one more game.
I have to say I was a bit worried after the first couple of minutes of overtime because you had so many good chances. I mean, when you have that many good chances, sometimes it ends up being the other way and against the run of play. But your guys, boy, you came out in that overtime and just you have to obviously start with that first shift, but they just kept going.
There was an energy level there. I mean, I felt like when we've gone to overtime, I usually don't talk to the guys for the first 2 minutes. I kind of let them collect their thoughts. I collect my thoughts. I usually step in the hallway and collect things. And when I get to sit there and listen to them talk, there was a confidence. There was a belief. There was you know, the want. And Cooper had that chance with 30 seconds left, and he's like, "Don't worry, coach. We'll end their season. Don't worry, coach. We'll do it." And I wasn't worried. I mean, it's one of those things where you believe in your kids, you put them in the right spot, and you hope that all the preparation that leads to this point pays off for them, and I felt like today it did.
I'm glad you weren't worried. Everybody on this side of the glass, I think, white knuckle time. And what about that 2-on-1 to finish the game?
You know, it was one of those things. I'm glad the brothers connected again. I mean, they've connected so many times this season.
It was perfect.
Kate Damrell drew the defenseman over to him. He found the little seam, and Hendricks caught the puck and he shot it simply, and it was just a celebration. Yeah, it was celebration to go right after that. It was just I mean, hearing the news of all these other things, Chad, I think there's some excitement in the air. There's some excitement in our locker room, and I'm really proud of them and high school sports.
I tell you, just following tonight, it has to be one of the craziest nights in high school hockey. I mean, frankly, And real fast, because I'm curious, because I like talking to you about hockey. I can't remember a bigger upset than Tri-High going to Williton winning that game. I mean, to be honest with you, that is just a massive upset.
Chad, if that holds true, I probably agree with you. I think personally, we've had some upsets in there that have occurred. But you're right.
The
I mean,
zero.
It's an eight. It's an eight over a one, an undefeated
zero.
One.
Yeah.
And you know, we'll worry about that next week. You know, it's tonight. It's about our guys. Looking at the bracket. I'll look at it tonight when I'm breaking down this game.
I was thinking as well. I'm glad it's Tuesday. I think everybody – I'm glad it's not Saturday.
Absolutely. We need the weekend. We need to have some rest time. We've got to get some guys healthy. But, you know, from Julian to our defensemen to our forwards to the guys on the bench, like what people don't understand is this is an ultimate team game. Yeah. There's guys that didn't play in this game tonight that had an impact. There's guys that played a ton that had an impact, and everybody in between. And I really hope that – they continue to buy in and continue to do the right things, because the right things do pay off, and we get to play again against New Richmond, a team we know and a team we know well, but this time we get to have them in our house.
By the way, I got to ask you, when you saw that puck bounce from the backboards in front, did your heart come to a complete stop?
I mean, there were some weird bounces back there that hadn't normally happened. You know, the one off Julian's face early on just kind of bounced and ricocheted, the one off the back glass. There was a couple that we misplayed a little bit that were, you know, some hard stoppers. But did my heart stop? No. No, it didn't.
You're there such was a some, cool customer.
I don't know about that. You'd have to ask the guys on that one. We had some moments. But we all have our moments, and we came together and found a way.
Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy just being part of something like this.
Absolutely.
This was fantastic.
Yes, it was. Thanks, Chad.
Congrats. Head coach B.J. Brandt of the Wausau West Warriors, 4-3 in overtime tonight. The Warriors survive Superior. And, again, what a great effort by Superior. You have to give them incredible kudos. It's got to be just an incredibly tough ride home. But the good news is we are back here on Tuesday night, 6:50 for the pregame, 7 o'clock for the opening faceoff. The Warriors taking on the New Richmond Tigers. And I tell you, if the game's as heavy as it was the first time around, it should be a great night to come out here and see some great high school hockey. But we'll be with you 6:50 on Tuesday here on WXCO. Thanks to our sponsors, without whose help we cannot bring you Wausau West Warrior High School Hockey. And thanks to you for joining us. Again, I'm Chad Holmes from Marathon Park in Wausau, where the Wausau West Warriors tonight defeat the Superior Spartans 4-3 in overtime. This has been Warrior Hockey on 98.9 WXCO. This has been Wausau West Warrior High School Hockey on 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Wausau West Hockey has been brought to you by the Cloverbelt Credit Union, Red Robin Restaurants, Sun Printing, the Wausau West Athletic Department, the Wausau West Hockey Booster Club, and Coast to Coast Marketing. Thanks for joining us for Wausau West Warrior High School Hockey on your home for the Warriors, 98.9 WXCO.
Necessarily the best way to go. So, you know, we're being directed back to learn from periods like that about what is going on now. And I think that can be helpful to us as we, as you say, get ready for what is to come.
Yeah, we had to live, you know, I saw a really great meme on social media that I agree with. You know, we had to live through the McKinleys, the Hoovers. We had to live through that to get to the FDR. We had to live through the horrible. We had to be exploited and desperate and usable before we said, hey, we've got enough. And I said, look, you know, I've been saying this constantly. I'm sure people are tired of it, but I do believe the solutions will come out of the suffering due to their savagery. The things that they are going to do and the things that they've done are going to make people very uncomfortable, are going to make people suffer. And out of that, I do believe, and I got to believe, that we're going to come back together and reunite in a direction that makes my children and my grandchildren's lives better.
I absolutely agree with that, Rick. And, you know, sadly, pain is one of the great teachers. I mean, when you're a little kid, you get close to the hot stove and you touch it, you remember.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not good. But you don't know until you've been, gotten that pain inflicted that that's the thing to be feared. And right now, I think we're in a period where people have not really seen the kind of thing that's currently happening. Sadly, so many of our voters, the people who put this current party in power, you know, didn't realize the pain that would be inflicted.
I disagree with you on that. I think they knew pain would be inflicted. I just didn't think they knew it was going to be them.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. They were, sadly, you know, many of them ready to inflict pain on others and to try to demonize others for what is currently going wrong with our system. And we have a systemic problem here. It's not a problem that immigrants created for us. They're here as one of the symptoms of the way the system isn't working. And that's the thing people need to address. But you're right. Some people were like, yeah, those people deserve it and whatever. And
some people just wanted cheap eggs. I just wanted cheap eggs.
That's right.
Which brings me back to what you guys are doing on February 27th. That's a Thursday. Right. You can register at Alacha Feb Panel, right? Is that where it's at?
That's right. It's bit.ly/Lawcha, LawchaFebPanel. That's right. Lawcha Feb Panel.
We'll work on getting things easier to get to. But going back to this idea of organizing against authoritarianism, you know, it's one of those things of understanding that you got a problem first before you can then solve that problem. Walk me through some of what you're hoping the panel is going to discuss and what you think people should know.
Well, first, we're going to bring together some of the smartest people I know, people who've thought about these kind of things through their work as historians for a long time. Will Jones of the University of Minnesota has written a lot about the civil rights movement and its era, black workers and their role in the labor movement. Felicia Kornbluh of University of Vermont, who's worked a lot on the history of reproductive rights. Nancy McLean, who many of your listeners and viewers will know, who wrote the wonderful book called Democracy in Chains, about the whole movement really that began in the 50s that has culminated, you might say, in this recent sort of government takeover we're witnessing. And Paul Ortiz, who's now at Cornell, he's been a leading activist and writer about labor, Latino, and Black history. And so these are folks who've thought about this stuff. They've looked at past events in ways that people have resisted authoritarianism in the U.S., and what we can learn from that. One thing that I would say is, you know, people talk about, are we witnessing a kind of fascism here? Is that what's happening? And I would say we don't have to look to Europe to be able to understand what's happening here. We saw something like this before in our history. It's what happened in the late 19th century. It was the creation of the Jim Crow South, where democracy was squelched, where people were divided by race, where the ruling class ruled in ways that benefited itself. So a lot of what we're seeing is a kind of reconstitution of that earlier vision. And these folks understand all of that. They can talk about what happened then, how workers resisted some of that stuff, and also about what's going on right now. And there's, I think, a lot to be excited about, Rick, because I think some organizing is already beginning that's laying the groundwork for what you're talking about in the long run.
No, this is, you know, right after Election Day, I said, look, this is where we're heading. It doesn't take a genius to figure out, you know, where we're going. You just have to remember a little bit of history. And, I have a friend who's an economics professor who said, can you name me, the robber barons? Can you name some of the robber barons, the billionaires of that era? And of course, you ticked a couple of them off, the Carnegies, the Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts. You can go down a list because you know who they are. The Jay Goulds of the world, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half.
That's right.
He goes, but go to the 1950s and 60s. Do you know who the billionaires of that period were? And you might be able to hunt, and you can throw out a rich guy's name, but they weren't as prevalent. They weren't as out front. They weren't as flashy because we had good policy that kind of reined them in. So yeah, now we've got the Musks and the Bezoses and the Gates. You can list the 1,800 billionaires we've got. Policy created them.
Yes. Policy created them, and you're so right about that. Just take Elon Musk for an example. I mean, this guy's businesses have relied upon massive federal contracts over the years. You know, Tesla really got off the ground because of help it got from the Obama administration.
Yep.
But a lot of these folks like to think that they've done it all on their own. Jeff Bezos wouldn't have his business if not for the massive taxpayer-funded innovations that created the internet that Amazon operates on. So, you know, we've had the emergence of this billionaire class, Rick. And you're right, it's a very different group from the ruling class, you might say, of the 1950s. Because these people who were all basically born on third base because of what the taxpayer laid out for them, they believe that they've created it all. And they believe that they, you know the best for everybody. Can you imagine somebody in the 50s thinking the way Elon Musk does now, that I know so much about everything that I'm just going to go in and decide what agencies live, what agencies die, who gets fired? I mean, you know, billionaires, the very wealthy then, had a degree of modesty. You know why? They lived through the Great Depression. They lived through the rise of the labor movement, and they also were somewhat worried about stepping out in that way because they knew there were people ready to push back.
There were people with pitchforks. And, yeah. You know, this is why it's always been curious to me that the Bezoses and the Musks aren't much more philanthropic. Because, look, with the kind of wealth that they have, they could build legacy. They could, and, you know, childhood poverty, they could, and veteran homelessness, they could, with the kind of wealth and initiative, if we're going to run this country like a business, they could easily solve our problems. They choose not to, because just as you said, they know better.
Yeah. I mean, that's something they believe for sure. And there are some that are better than others. I think Bill Gates uses his foundation to some extent in good things. I don't always agree with what he's done, but these other folks don't even make a pretense of being out there for the public good, building a legacy. At least Carnegie built public libraries for people. He broke unions, he broke strikes, but he did leave a little something. Jeff Bezos, I would say it's the exact opposite. He's taken an institution in the Washington Post that used to sort of do good journalism, and he's breaking it even as we speak.
Yeah, but you brought up Carnegie breaking unions. That seems to be the fascination, the purview of the billionaire class, you know, to ensure that the poor and the downtrodden never organize against them, because you've got the Bezoses and the Musks right now as we speak, you know, trying to have the NLRA ruled unconstitutional. There's all of these assaults on organized labor in the on the federal workforce, because we're seeing all these firings. So I guess last line of questioning I've got, as we're, you know, organizing against authoritarianism, isn't this really a worker uprising? Or shouldn't it be?
It should be. It should be. Right now, I think a lot of workers are still on the sidelines. As you say, they're waiting for the price of eggs to come down. They don't necessarily see yet or have felt yet some of the pain that's going to flow from what's currently happening. But workers do need to be in the midst of this. I would argue that really it depends on workers. It depends on workers coming to understand that what is currently happening is not in their interest and beginning to organize for something better. And as you were saying earlier, I think sometimes you have to live through some pain to be able to be motivated for that. Most workers today, as you know, Rick, and your listeners well know, I mean, are just trying to get by.
Yep.
They're working really hard to do that. And like, they don't have time to engage in all of the kind of stuff that, you know, in a time of crisis, sometimes you need to do. Organizing, for example.
No, look, and the only time in the history of this country that we really unite is around crisis. And I fear one is coming. And, you know, I always go back to the old labor frame of, you know, when your stomach's empty, your head gets right. You know, maybe that's what it's going to take. But, Joseph, I appreciate the time. I wish you guys the best on the panel. February 27th, 7 p.m., bit.ly/LachaPanel. We're gonna do better
Lacha
on this.
Feb panel. Lacha Feb panel.
There you go. We'll get links out
of
social
media. Or you can go, people can go to our easier to find website, just lacha.org.
There you go. Better yet. Joseph McCartan, okay. I appreciate you taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Is this something we should be gathering around? Are you ready to get out in the streets? You got those comfortable shoes that Obama never used? Better find them. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio WXCO, home of the big high school sports show.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and cold tonight, lows 0 to 5 below. Sunny and milder tomorrow, highs near 20. Continued warming for the weekend, mostly sunny and mid-20s Saturday, more clouds and upper 30s Sunday. Currently, we're at 15.
The Todd Alba Show.
Elon Musk putting in so much money that it drowns out other people's voices to decide who our next Supreme Court justice is. Whether or not you're going to vote Republican or Democrat or Schimmel or Crawford, your voice is getting drowned out by Elon Musk, a guy who has no business in Wisconsin. And you don't think that Brad Schimmel is going to be in Elon Musk's pocket? It's going to affect us in Wisconsin.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's been really interesting watching Elon Musk and Donald Trump with their little bromance going and doing interviews and talking about, you know, I actually saw rebate checks. This is how they're going to sell the destruction of your government. This is how they're going to sell you dirty air and dirty water. And this is how they're going to repeal the 20th century. They're going to give you a little token. Here's a couple of dollars. Now, remember, they told you we're going to save, you know, what was the number? Like $700 million by destroying this one agency. Works out to like $2.50 a person. So are you willing to give up control of who and where we are for a handful of pennies? I sure hope not, because I got to tell you, it's looking real, real bad. And here to share some thoughts on just how bad it is from the inside, I've asked Maria Owens Powell to come share some thoughts with us. She's council president for AFGE, Council 238. They deal with the EPA. You know, the people who make sure we have clean air and clean water. You know, those folks. Maria, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. Thank you so much for having me.
So look, I'm a kid who grew up in the 70s in Cleveland. I argue Cleveland was the home of the Clean Water and Clean Air Act. As a kid, suffered horribly from asthma. You couldn't go in Lake Erie. It was a lot of bad. And it was because a Republican president said, hey, we should probably, you know, have clean air and water, that you guys exist. And now you've got, well, all out assaults on government across the board, including our Environmental Protection Agency.
Absolutely. Isn't that the irony of it, that it's now a Republican administration that is seeking to disband the entire agency? As you said, I mean, in the 70s, Cleveland wasn't alone. There was widespread, you know, water pollution, air pollution, folks with asthma problems being exacerbated. We've come a long way since then. And every one of these current actions that are being taken against the employees of the EPA is just setting us up to roll all the way back to the 70s, if not even worse.
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling old, to be honest with you, because the 70s seemed like a long time ago, but we had acid rain, we had smog, we had, as a kid, had to watch the evening news to see, hey, will I be able to go outside and play tomorrow, because the pollution index was through the roof, and we, through good policy, We fix that. My fear through greed and bad policy and, well, destruction of government, my children, my grandchildren may inherit the same kind of environment I grew up in.
Oh, I think that's a very real fear. I mean, as civil servants at the EPA, we have one mission. It's protecting human health and the environment. It has nothing to do with politics, Republican, Democrat. It doesn't. It just means that we fight against this unprecedented climate emergency that we're seeing right now and ensure every American has clean air and drinking water.
Yeah, it's one of those things I think we've taken, I know I've taken for granted, you know, and I think my kids have as well, but this is kind of, help me here, because there's part of me that goes, maybe this assault can be turned into something positive, to where we start talking about, hey, do we really want to be a place where we have to collect rainwater to get clean water because the groundwater is so badly polluted, and even that we can't trust? Maybe this gets us to rethink the great work that you guys do and maybe solidify it a little more.
We often say at EPA, because I also work for the EPA, not for AFGE, and we always say that when you can turn on your water and cook dinner, when you can go for a jog and breathe, that means we're doing a good job. So it is catch 22. It's when the American public doesn't think about us, that's when it's proof that we are doing our job. So it is a difficult thing to help people understand, but do we really want to roll back, number one?
No.
And
no,
number two, natural disasters are continuing. We have folks that are out at the LA fire cleanup. But since then, we've also had flooding in Kentucky. Who knows what they're going to need, right? And on top of that, we have accidents and emergencies. Right up by Philly, there's a fire where folks are, you know, confined to their home. Who am I sending there if you get rid of our agency?
People just have to figure it out for themselves. This is freedom, Marie. This is freedom. Liberty.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
You're on your own, brother, is the kind of freedom and liberty they're selling us. And I gotta be honest, the more that they continue to do this, because the joke I made the other day is, you know, sadly, I think they're going to have egg on their face if they can afford the eggs, because all of these cuts. And look at the thing with the nuclear stockpile. They went and fired a bunch of people. Then they go, oh, gee, we actually need those people. Couldn't find them to bring them back. And I find that to be that kind of incompetence all across the board, because these people don't believe in the work that you do. They don't believe you should do the work that you do. And they're arrogant enough to believe that, you know, some invisible hand is going to take care of it.
Rick, you know, I think it's even worse than that. I think they just don't care. So on Friday, the agency fired 388 probationary employees. The agency's refusing to give me a list of those people that were fired. And then when I found out why, it makes it even worse. It's because yesterday they were calling some of those 388 people to say, oops, we didn't mean it. You're unfired.
How can you unfire someone?
So those poor people had a long weekend, right? President's weekend, fretting about the loss of their livelihood. And for a handful of them, it was, oopsie, never mind. They just don't care.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. But I think the incompetence is even bigger. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that they're not curious, they don't care. And where they do care, it's in their interest to destroy any regulation. Because ultimately, for me, it's always about follow the money. And the money is, if we can destroy regulations, you know, job killers, you know, Marie, job killing regulation. If we could destroy those, there's more profit to be made.
Yeah, and I think it's that they act and then they think after. For example, they send a bunch of people who worked in environmental justice home on administrative leave. Well, I know of at least one of them who was out doing LA fire cleanup. Well, the minute they put them on administrative leave, they lose access to all EPA systems. That individual was stranded out there in California because he couldn't get onto the system to book airfare to get home. Like, EPA had to step in. AFG had to step in and say, hey, EPA, you need to on administrative leave this person to at least get them home.
at the minimum. But, you know, this is – so let me ask you this, because one of the frames I heard a lot during the campaign is, you know, we just want to run government like a business. I'm sure you've heard this 1,000 times. We just want it to run like a business. We want, you know, strict controls. We want people back in the office. We want these certain business things. One, do you think this is what being run like a business looks like? And if you do think this is what a business looks like, you know, is this what we want?
So, God, I hope this is not what running a business looks like. The way I've heard that before, and the way I think about it is, you wouldn't take someone who had a successful business as, say, running a nail salon to run, you know, a chemical company. That's exactly what the similarities here. These are people who have never worked in government, who don't understand how government works, doesn't understand the checks and balances, not only that we have, but why we have them. I am not saying that there are not improvements needed, probably across the government. This just is not the way we do it.
Yeah, no, there's always,
I don't know.
There's always a way to improve. There's always something we want to make better, and we should be striving to do that. And for those people go, you just don't want to audit government. No, I do. In fact, we have auditors who do this. These aren't auditors. These are coders. So it's telling me that they're not really interested in auditing. They're interested in getting their tentacles into every branch of our government and ferreting as deep and as far into our information systems as possible. It's not about good governance. It's not about efficiency. It's not about any of that. It's about pure gold mining greed. And that's, for me, that's the bottom line in this.
I agree, and I think it's very much they're interested in shock and awe. They want to show their power. When they send home, and with the intent of eventually dismissing our environmental justice folks, included in that roundup were secretaries. Those people don't do anything but process time cards and travel requests. They don't do environmental justice work specific. They just support the group. That it made no sense whatsoever. And the response we got back from the agency was, well, they're in that organization. This is what they want. They want the big splash, the shock and awe. Mm-hmm. They want to show the American people we're in charge.
No, I mean, we're going to make the federal government, and you're going to be able to enjoy what the private sector gets, which is at-will employment and desperation. And they want to know, they want you to know who's the boss. Which is weird, but and not a way to run a lemonade stand, let alone the most powerful government on the planet. But here we are. So in this moment, Marie, you know, this to me is an opportunity for we as the public to really support the people who were fired. I mean, I look at how the right rallied around all of the criminals who broke into our Capitol and destroyed, you know, and defecated on the floor of our Capitol on January 6th, how they rallied around them. Is this not an opportunity for us to rally around the people who have been fired and say, hey, you know, these people are victims and these people should be made whole and raise them up in a way that makes them feel empowered and all workers feel empowered?
Absolutely. And I know AFG Council 238, we're still exploring the administrative and legal options, but we've had a swell of support of different organizations reaching out to us, past EPA leadership. Management reaching out to us from both sides of the aisle saying, hey, this isn't right. This isn't the way it's supposed to work. It's just been so difficult because every day they're throwing something new at us. Fork in the road, probationary employees, DEI, hiring freeze, return to office. You know, as recent as yesterday, there was a new executive order or a presidential memo about ensuring accountability for agencies. And it specifically says, the president and the AG, subject to the president's supervision, have authoritative interpretation of laws.
So it means they can do whatever they want to whomever they want, however they want. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what it sounds like to me.
So that means he can just walk down.
Science agency, that's when we progress. When there is robust debate over what the data says and what the data means. This is just seeking to just stop everything in its tracks.
So what you're telling me is when King Donald and Prince Elon, when they come walking through your agency, everyone cowers in fear, not because they're not doing their job, not because they don't know what they're doing, but because they might offend someone by looking weird or having a different thought. Is that what you're telling
Absolutely.
Me?
Absolutely. That's exactly what it sounds like to me.
Now, again, I said all during the campaign that you know, Project 2025 was all about making patronage great again. It was all about, you know, giving an authoritarian-leaning government the ability to, well, create their own realities. I think I was right.
Oh, absolutely. And Project 2025, it wasn't a plan. It was a checklist, and they are accomplishing everything on there. They are literally going bullet by bullet, at least as it applies to my agency, the EPA. They are good. So we know where they're going next. The expectation is that the folks that are on administrative leave, they're going to move to do a reduction in force with them. The enforcement division likely going to go, as you said earlier, who wants to fine people that are polluting as long as they're making big money. So it's just horrible.
When they accomplish their mission, and look, they have been very clear for decades that they want to deregulate, they want to slash and burn, you know, because job killers, Marie, you're a job killer, you are.
Yep.
When they finally accomplish their goal, which is to destroy your agency and neuter it, what does that mean for the average, you know, truck driver? What does that mean for the average, you know, person who's working at a grocery store, mom taking the kids to the park?
Sure.
How does that filter down to me and my neighbors and my kids? What does that look like?
So what that means is if you are a person who lives in an underrepresented community, the pollution is not just going to continue, it is going to increase because there's no cop on the duty there. Okay, so your children who suffer from asthma will suffer more. It also means if we have a train derailment like in East Palestine, you're on your own. You may, I don't know if the administration wants you to use a bucket and a mop, but that toxic spill is not going to be cleaned up if the EPA no longer exists. If there are wildfires, hurricanes, unprecedented flooding, the response to clean up those type of natural disasters, the individuals for that will not be here. They're not going to be on duty. They're not going to be around to do it.
You make an interesting point, because if you remember when President Trump went to Los Angeles and they had that meeting, they had that little PR stunt, whatever they were doing with the mayor. And the mayor's like, well, when can people get back in their homes? And the mayor's like, you know, a week or so, we just want to make sure everything's safe. And Trump's like, no, let them go right back in there now. Get them in there with mops and buckets. I think you've already hit on
irresponsible. How irresponsible. Everybody's home is full of household hazardous waste. What happens when those chemicals ignite? You have hazardous chemicals. It's not rocket science. So you need to handle it appropriately. You don't send people in with a feather duster and say, go ahead, you're fine, go home. That's just not what you do.
But freedom. But freedom, Marie. Freedom.
I understand freedom, but I also appreciate safety, and I appreciate guidance given from those individuals who have committed their life to protection of human health and the environment, and on what their opinions is of when it is safe for me and my family to re-enter.
Yeah, I mean, we used to, you know, this is the scary part for me, and, you know, all seriousness, the part that's frightening to me is how we've belittled expertise and knowledge and people who have spent a lifetime, you know, researching and studying and understanding things, how we've belittled that. And now we're in this weird spot where it's just all about the gotcha. It's all about the social media memes or the, you know, I went viral. We're in a weird spot.
Yeah, and I echo how scary it is. The employees at the EPA, most of them are there not because it's a job, not for the glamour, but they're truly dedicated. They're true environmentalists that are truly dedicated to ensuring not only our children, but our children's children have a habitable planet.
Now, what's interesting, if I could stop you there, I know my red hats, what they heard you just say is you're a bunch of tree huggers. You just want us standing around doing nothing.
Oh, gosh, absolutely not. These people want to have successful lives as well. They just have chosen to go into federal service to help make the world a little bit of a better place. They're not. No, it's not a bunch of folks hugging a tree and saying, let's not do anything. Let's not progress. What we're saying is let's progress, but let's do it in the safest way possible, not only for ourselves, but for our future generations.
Absolutely. And look, you know, where I started this, I remember my childhood. I remember, you know, sucking the fumes out of the leaded gasoline that was choking us at every opportunity. The indexes, the smog, the horrible, the fish in Lake Erie floating sideways with one eye looking up at the sky because they're all dead. I don't want that for my children and my grandchildren. So we can and we must and we have to do better if we're going to leave them something worth inheriting. But Marie, I appreciate you taking time for us. Keep up the fight. Last question. What do we do in this moment? Is there a marching order? Is there hope? Is there something that you're going, I said yesterday, I had someone on yesterday, I go, you know, what's the marching order? Should we take a picture of the trees? Should we take a picture of the clean water? Because we're going to, maybe that's the only way we'll remember it. What's the marching order?
I think number one is there's always room for hope. But I think the action, because we need to take action. The action is every single day, call your representatives, especially those on the other side of the aisle. Call and tell them what you want. I don't care if we blow up the phone system by all these phone calls. I also challenge every single person that hears this to reach out to 5 family members or 5 friends and challenge them to also call representatives every single day. They have to hear us.
Yeah. No, this is an organizing opportunity. It is. As labor unions, as representatives, it's incumbent on you guys. You're the last line of defense, which is why you're number one on their hit list. If we're going to save this thing, it's going to be you folks. But Marie, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Marie Owens Powell, she's council president of AFGE, Council 238, the EPA folks, the people who give you the clean water and air, the cops on the beat. Tell me what you think. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Do we need it? Can we just buy bottled water, right? Nestle will sell it to us. You do understand most of that's tap water. Yeah. Quick break, right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day the National Lawyers Guild held their first convention in the nation's capital. The guild was established as a way to bring together progressive lawyers dedicated to fighting for basic and progressive change in our political and economic system and to assure that human rights be regarded as more sacred than property interests. Members were admitted regardless of race, sex, or political beliefs. The early guild stood up for FDR's New Deal reforms like a full Social Security program against the staunch opposition of the American Bar Association. From its inception, protecting the rights of working people has been an important effort for the guild. At the first convention, they passed a resolution supporting the rights of working people to organize and collectively bargain. Guild lawyers supported the founding of both the United Auto Workers and the Congress of Industrial Organizations. They also stood up for civil rights, adopting an anti-lynching resolution at their first convention. During the civil rights era, they provided legal aid for activists and fought for voting rights. This made them a target during the 1950s Cold War anti-communist hysteria. The FBI targeted the Guild for investigation. By 1955, the Guild had dropped to just 500 members. In the 1970s, the Guild successfully sued to find out the extent of FBI spying. They discovered that 1,000 informants had generated FBI files of 400,000 pages on the Guild and its members. Despite this harassment, the Guild has kept up its fight for working people. The organization has opposed anti-worker legislation from Taft-Hartley to the passage of NAFTA. In 2012, the Guild celebrated its 75th anniversary stronger than ever.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, you know, look, anybody who remembers the 70s, and I do, remembers it was not a great time. Pollution was bad. Things were not great. And it was one of those, I had taken my son to like an old car swap meet kind of car show. And, you know, you had some of the old muscle cars from the 60s and 70s. you know, some of the GTOs, some of the Chevelles, you know, some of those really sweet cars. And, you know, he's like, you know, who are using, you know, real gas, the leaded stuff, the, you know, the stuff that not quite the way it was back then, but, you know, lots of exhaust fumes, lots of taste, if you will. And I remember my kid going, just, you know, oh man, that tastes terrible. And, you know, it was one of those things where you go, yeah, because that's how it was. Now imagine sitting in traffic bumper to bumper, you know, for as far as the eye can see, surrounded by that stuff. And oh, by the way, air conditioning wasn't something you used. The windows were wide open. So you were sucking the fumes of the car in front of you and beside you, and you were eating that stuff. And, you know, I remember telling the kids about, you know, going to Lake Erie. And you couldn't go swimming in it because it was so badly polluted, but you did see a lot of fish who were, you know, looking up at the sky with one eye because they were floating dead. And it's one of those things, you know, as a small kid, I remember, you know, it's one of those, you know, I know we use the T word a lot, trauma, but it's one of those vivid memories I have as a kid, you know, seeing this fish frozen in the shoreline, you know, just looking upward. And So I guess the question, and this is where the reason I bring this up is not to regale you with tales of terror from the past, but because, you know, is this where we want to return? You know, we took lead out of gasoline. We got rid of acid rain. The smog levels came down because we said, hey, those smokestacks that are spewing into the air, maybe we should do something about. Hey, corporate America, maybe don't be spewing all of your stuff into the river. That's caught on fire numerous times. Maybe don't do that. And look, Cleveland is, you know, and I say, look, my hometown of Cleveland gets a bad rap. Like it was the only place on earth that was that badly polluted. No, it's just the one that the spark happened at the right time and ignited. Could have happened in a lot of places, and actually did happen, just not to the extent. So you go back to the question being, is this where we want to return? To where there wasn't a cop on the beat? To where there wasn't someone saying, no, don't do that. And if you do, there'll be a penalty. Don't take all of your hazardous waste and just dump it in a field somewhere because it's going to get into the water table. And that's bad for us, you and me. Might be cheaper for the corporation, might be better for the bottom line, might make the CEO and the shareholders happy, but the people who have to live around that plant, not so much. And as Marie brought up, you know, it's going to be the most vulnerable communities first. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, a minority in a minority community. It was bad. They are going to be the people who suffer first. But that air didn't just stay right there. The bad policy wasn't just there. And this is where I come back to, we've lived through bad things. We've lived through chaos. We've lived through corporate America getting away with literally murder. And we fixed it through policy, through smart policy, through, and again, you know, back to this suffering and solution model. There was suffering, there was pain, there was chaos, there was something wrong. And out of that came the solutions to move us forward. Now what we're hearing again is, well, we can't do any of that because those onerous job-killing regulations. A lesson we're going to have to relearn, sadly. We're going to have to remember, I guess, why all of that stuff was put into place in the first place. I know, job-killing regulation, but what about the people-killing lack of? Maybe, sadly, going to have to learn that once again. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you remember the good old days? Sucking leaded gasoline fumes out of the tailpipe, the dual tailpipes. Remember that? Yeah. I want to hear it. Rick at the Rick Smith Show.com. Miss any portion of the program? Grab the podcast. freespeech.org for the video. And as always, thanks for being here. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio. WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Matt Piper. Hamas released four bodies, which Israeli officials said included two young children who have been long feared dead. Their mother was said to be one of them, but hours later, Israeli forces said that another person's remains were released instead. They say those remains are not of any hostage. Our Deborah Patta is in East Jerusalem.
Under a grim Gaza sky, four coffins were paraded in a Hamas propaganda spectacle. The fighters handed over the bodies of four-year-old Ariel Bibas and his nine-month-old brother Kafir. Israel says their mother Shiri was not among them. The family has become an indelible symbol of the October 7 terror attack.
In Washington,
the yeas are 51. The nays are 49.
With that close vote, Kash Patel is the new FBI director. All Democrats voted no, as the Republicans.